Welcome to Decades From Home, a podcast about Germany. I'm Nick Houghton of 40%German.com, and I'm joined by our man in the Nürnbergerland, Simon Maddox, and coming straight out of Bonn, stalwart producer Simon Josie, to discuss the weird and wonderful side of living in Germany. Hi, Simon. Hi, producer Simon.
Evening, gents.
Good evening.
So to kick things off, producer Simon is frankly a man of mystery. We know little about the award-winning man on the boards. All that we really know is that he loves two things: editing audio content and staying at home. Despite his famous enjoyment of never leaving his editing booth, producer Simon did just that last Saturday night when he wrapped himself up in the warmest clobber and went to see some Bundesliga football. So Simon, was it worth putting shoes on to go see some football?
Absolutely, because my team won and that's all that matters, right?
Who was playing?
Okay, so my team is Borussia Mönchengladbach, and they're my team basically because of you two guys. So once upon a time when I was just a fan of the podcast, not actually involved with the podcast, I wrote in and asked for not a recommendation of who to follow in the Bundesliga, but maybe a method or a process to go through to eliminate all the teams I didn't want to follow and maybe settle on a team that I did want to follow. And Borussia Mönchengladbach came back with a green tick from you guys. And I didn't want to follow Cologne, and I didn't want to just be a samey and follow Bayern Munich. So I went with Borussia Mönchengladbach, and they're sort of solidly mid-table. But on Saturday night, I got some free tickets through a family connection and drove up there, and they were playing Bochum, who are bottom of the table. So obviously there was expectations of a win, and they delivered a very solid 3-0 win. And I think the cool thing was that despite playing the bottom team, the stadium was well patronized. And where I get to sit, it's in a very family-friendly part of the stadium, but it's got a good view of the pitch. And most importantly, you can see all the ultras sort of opposite as well. And they put on a big show. So it's family friendly, but a lot of fun. And on this particular night, it was a good result too.
Is 3-0 the most satisfying football result?
Yeah, because it's like, there's no doubt.
It is, isn't it?
There's no doubt with 3-0. You won, you know?
Yeah. But it's like different from like 2-0 or 4-0. 4-0 is like it's beginning of a drubbing, or if a drubbing itself. But I feel like 3-0 is like, Newcastle won 3-0 a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, it's pretty satisfying. It's really just precise. You've been screwed exactly this amount, but yeah. Were the goals good?
The first goal was great, and second goal was great, and the third goal was a penalty, so that was great.
I don't know much about the Gladbach team at the moment, even though my brother-in-law and my nephews and one of my nieces are big Gladbach fans. I couldn't name many players on the team. And I did enjoy seeing that they have a Japanese player who was on the bench, whose name would be Fuck You or something like that. I was like, hopefully he gets to come on. But he didn't.
He didn't. No, he so did not. No.
I was waiting. I was like, if he comes on, Simon's getting a text. But he stayed on the bench. Poor lad.
Yeah, no, it was good. I mean, it was raining, but it's a really nice stadium. And there was no rain anywhere near me. And it wasn't too cold on Saturday night. I think it was maybe 9 degrees or something. So it was, you could sit there for a whole game without getting too miserable. But yeah, no, it was great.
Yeah, did they have like a cringy football hymn?
They do have a song that everyone in the whole stadium sings.
Did you hold up your scarf?
Actually, I did have a scarf. I bought a scarf when I got there. I thought I'd better do something.
Ah, you
but
fucking
I didn't
casual.
Hold it up, but I could have because everyone else was. So I don't know why I didn't. I should have.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only bit of German football. Like, obviously, it's the done thing as the sort of Anglosphere in Germany to like praise the Bundesliga for all its wonderful features and cheap ticket prices and beer in the stadium and standing sections, blah, blah, blah. But it's the one bit of football in Germany that I'll never really get over is the let's all stand and sing this saccharine hymn to the football gods.
Is that because Newcastle's song is an instrumental from the movie. What's the name of the movie?
It's Local Hero. Yeah. It's Mark.
It's a great tune, but that's what you're just bitter because your song has no lyrics.
I love Blade and Races, but it's different, right? So like Blade and Races, I think it's one of those things that if it had been a shitty song that was like created in the 1940s, if it was a shitty song that was created in like 1910 or something like that, or 1800, right? It can still be a shitty song, but it has like a sort of particular historical factor to it. Like Blade and Races isn't, it is, it's like a stupid folk song about like going to a horse meet basically, but it resonates because it goes back a couple of hundred years. But I think because a lot of clubs were founded quite late in comparison to sort of British clubs, you find a lot of these teams come up with like hymns in the sort of 60s and 70s, which I guess wasn't the time for hymn creation or like football hymn creation. They're all kind of something, you'll never walk alone, which is a great sentiment, but isn't. It's a droney tune. You'll never walk alone.
But you also, of course, as a Gladbach fan, you suffer from a 3-0 win by having to hear a Scooter song three times because the tour song, the goal song, is Scooter's Maria. I didn't know it was Maria, but I knew it was Scooter. That's not great.
Yeah, I mean, I've been three times to see games there, and there are certain traditions, and none of them impress me particularly. But nevertheless, I would say to anyone who's visiting Germany or new to Germany, I'd say go along to a game because it is pretty impressive just to watch. I mean, the first time I went, I can't remember, we might have been playing Augsburg actually, and the away fans sit in one sort of segment of the stadium. And they let off these red flares, and there was just this massive red mist for the first 5 minutes at that corner of the state. You couldn't see anything. They wouldn't have been able to see anything. It was hilarious. I was just sitting there laughing. I just thought it was crazy.
It is quite a common feature of a Bundesliga game. Whistle goes, 5 minutes later, you only see half the pitch.
Yeah.
It's kind of impressive. I mean, the goal song, I mean, some clubs like Bayern's music, when you see the Bayern Munich games, it's disheartening. It's just 90 minutes going, Bayern. And then the when they score a goal, it's some ridiculous old school relic of the past that's obviously very important to the club. I prefer the modern stuff for sure, like Tottenham had until recently. We had Darude Sandstorm, which is basically just like a rave track. So like every song, like the stadium would just erupt into dancing. We've now unfortunately got something different that's not quite as fun, but I guess Scooter is the German equivalent of Darude Sandstorm. So I guess Gladbach are making some sound choices there.
Moving on, it wouldn't be a podcast without at least turning our more than weary eyes to the subject of politics. I know I have a reputation as a politics nerd, but I'm beginning to get tired of this election, and there's still a month to go. Immigration has been at the forefront of politics throughout 2024, even before the attacks in Solingen, Mannheim, and in December, Magdeburg, but the topic seems unlikely to lose its position as the topic of the federal election, especially following the tragic deaths of a 2-year-old and a 41-year-old in Aschaffenburg last week, apparently killed by a 28-year-old Afghan national who came to Germany in 2022. And now, though, the CDU have decided to take action despite not being in government yet, as they still lead in the polls, nor there actually being a majority in any form within the Bundestag for any party. The CDU are left with making simply proposals, and under the motion, the German Bundestag calls on the federal government to implement the following measures immediately. CDU leader Friedrich Merz has offered 5 points of focus for the government, including permanent border controls, rejection, and detention pending deportation. Listeners will note the points are not very specific and aren't mentioning any specific laws, but there are some other proposals that have come through in the last few hours that are possibly going to be discussed on Wednesday. So we've got some these 5-point plan. There's a policy for change in internal security, which is another kind of motion proposal. It's got 27 points, concerns a lot to do with migration, but it also interestingly has an example of a non migration aspect to it, where they're talking about minimum storage periods for IP addresses and the strengthening of intelligence services. There's also some aspects with EU border protections to be strengthened. Or asylum seekers that wish to enter from the EU or Switzerland should be turned away, so on and so forth. There's also the something called the Influx Limitation Act that they're proposing, which is a limitation of immigrants should once again become the goal of the residence law, and family reunification should no longer be possible in a lot of instances, and state police and federal police will also be able to end the stay of people who are required to leave the country, and if they catch them at train stations, for example. So there's a few different things going on within the CDU in these proposals. Is this, do you think, guys, a bit of political grandstanding, or is it really just no change here, no actual proposals? What is the point of all this, do you think?
I mean, obviously, when any German leader or any leader of any European states is talking about these things, one of the things they're going to have to contend with is the fact that German borders are part of Schengen. And I know that there have been some special border controls put in place at the German borders. I was subject to a couple of them myself returning from Croatia for my summer holidays. It didn't seem to affect anyone who was white in a German car. So I'm not sure how these efforts are being sort of monitored or controlled by the government. But yeah, as part of Schengen, it's going to be tricky. But Merz just has to say these things at this point, doesn't he, really? Like, he's trying to gain votes from the AfD, and these are one of the bits of bait you can throw out there. But of course, to get anything action on this, it does seem that it's going to require the support of the AfD, and it's a very delicate balancing act to try and court the favour of a party no one should be working with, especially when, yeah, it's only a matter of time for the SPD and the Greens will be producing their own proposals. So they're not exactly going to be saying, oh yeah, we'll do that because we've got no idea what we're going to do. They've all got their own strategies, and they're probably quite happy watching Merz's party make these kinds of relatively obvious plays for the right.
The funny thing was that they actually put within the draft of these 5 points a specific criticism of the AfD, and despite that, the AfD has said today that they're gonna support this motion and these potential law changes and the bill that's being proposed by Friedrich Merz. Although they've obviously come into criticism, and as you said, the Greens and the SPD are going to come up with their own proposals, and in fact, they've already been rejected by the CDU. It just feels like loads of political grandstanding with no actual, like, like if we're talking about, oh, well, we're going to stop anyone coming in who's an asylum seeker. And it's like, okay, even if that's legally possible, how much it cost? That's the question. Are we going to do like in Britain with the Rwanda thing and go, here's the solution to the problem that isn't really a solution. It's also going to cost us £500 million. It's like, is that what we're going to do? I don't really know what the point of all this is, to be honest.
I mean, I said we're into the final month now. I know my wife got her voting documentation, came through the letterbox today. So people are going to be starting paying a lot more active attention if they haven't already engaged with this. So this is the time when these parties have to say the sort of slightly bombastic declarations of things to try and get votes, because although there are many parties to choose from, the majority of Germans vote the way they have voted for a long time. And to try and get someone to change their mind from CSU to AfD to SPD to whatever to Green is going to require something pretty major at the moment. People are pretty unhappy.
Yeah. I can see that. But there's also a statistic I read today that said that when sort of polled, 20% of voters said that the immigration should be the foremost important topic of the federal election, where 70% of people said that there was actually equal or more important topics to be discussed in the federal election. So it does sort of suggest that there's a lot of focus being put on the immigration debate, obviously because of these recent attacks. I mean, there's a statistic I read that said that asylum applications dropped by 30% last year. And you're like, well, okay. Like, when was that going to be reported? Was anyone going to mention that?
I mean, the issue with all these other very legitimate issues that people will be voting on, whether it be housing shortages, cost of living, all of these, like, as soon as you try and discuss any of those policies with anyone who isn't interested in actually discussing, they're just going, well, if we got rid of the immigrants, then blah, blah, blah. There's no way of actually having any meaningful discussion because they will just be redirected to the topic of migration being the reason, everything can just be immediately connected to it, and it makes these discussions about other policy points so challenging to have. We mentioned a minute ago, like kindergartners off mic, something as simple as like the education of children.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's like going to be disingenuous about having that discussion is going to go, well, because of the immigrants, mm-hmm. like that's why mm-hmm. we have. And once you've gone down that path, you're not having an argument anymore, really. It's just trying to get the person to stop talking about IFD and brown people.
Well, it's the thing is, it's like that we get to the point of the Daily Mail sort of blaming migration for traffic congestion on migration. And you just say, oh God, okay, here we go. But I suppose we could blame social media and the far right for all this, which brings us neatly to a particular incident that happened on Sunday, which was the RFD conference. We've obviously been tracking their depressing rise in the polls for a good few years now. But having essentially declared their switch to openly extreme far-right policies a few weeks ago, they've been in the news again after billionaire Elon Musk addressed the RFD rally at the weekend, as I mentioned, appearing as a giant head on screens that someone seems to have forgotten to set to the non-1984 dystopian vision aspect ratio. Musk rambled on about various topics, sometimes confusing British and American talking points. I watched the entire video, guys, just so you didn't have to. All 10 minutes of it. It was fucking awful. So what did you make of Musk's appearance in front of the RFD collective? Was it a little on the nose to invite someone who only recently exhibited involuntary Hitler salute spasms on an international stage?
Well, I mean, you talk about on the nose. The first thing I saw was a shot in The Guardian, and they deliberately picked an image for the main page where a flag waver had been timed perfectly. So it looked like Musk had a little Hitler moustache in a giant Big Brother head. that was enough for me. I was like, I don't need to engage anymore with this. My mind is made up. This just validated it. So yeah, well done you for watching it. And I'm very pleased that is not my job.
Do you know what it was? This is how it's broken up. It was basically a 2.5 minute speech that was sort of semi-prepared with like really general talking points about kind of how... it was absolutely ridiculous. Some of the most crazy shit I've ever heard. And it makes you wonder about genuinely the intelligence of people who are listening to that and thinking this is some sound politics. So he pointed out in his best impression of like a rabid Brexiteer from 2016 in the first like, I guess like minute and a half, that there was too much interference from Brussels and German politics. And I was like, ooh, I wonder why Elon Musk with all these companies based in America would want to weaken Germany's support for the EU. It's a weird decision to make. Has he got ulterior motives? Unbelievably, Musk, in a moment so lacking in self-awareness that it's like frankly stunning. And I'm amazed no one seems to have actually mentioned it or like been shouting it from the rooftops. He went on to say, after dissing Brussels and their bureaucrats, he said, this is a direct quote, there's too much control from global elites. And I was like, really, Elon? Too much control from global elites? From the South African billionaire and single largest backer of the American president, Donald Trump.
But he doesn't mean tech bro billionaires.
No, he doesn't mean this, him.
He means Jews. That's what he means.
That's what he means, isn't
he? He means Jews. There is no lack of self-awareness. I mean, there is part of that in a lot of what he does, but he knows exactly what he's doing. The audience who are captive there, they were not going, oh, this is the head of X. That's a strange blend. Yes, I know. Yeah, the Koch brothers, get them.
it was like so rambling and weird. And then there was like the fact that he couldn't really pronounce the RFD Chancellor candidate, Alice Weidel's name. It was Alice Weidel. That's actually like a punishment that I wish upon her, that everyone just mispronounces her name. She looks like someone who'll be annoyed by that. There was like a 4 minute speech, as I said, and then Elon and Alice reprised their double act from their X.com interview at the start of the month. And they channeled all that awkward pandemic Zoom call energy. And she was on stage literally going, can you hear me? Can you hear me? And it's just so, I can't, it's so cringy. I can't believe anyone takes them seriously. But they do. That's the crazy 20% of the population from polling data have planned to vote for this fucking party. And they just look like rank amateurs.
It's troubling. I feel like I've picked a really awful time to return to the show.
No, we needed you, Simon. We needed you back.
We used to not really chat about this, and now suddenly, like, we never talked about Nazis.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually I've been sick for the last week. I did mention on the last podcast, and I've had a lot of fever dreams.
Oh no!
It's been a tough journey, and I did have one where I was in the streets of a German town, and suddenly there were Straßenbahn trams filled with pyrotechnics and Nazis. And I ran away from them. And then when I found the anti-Nazi group, because I have no hair, they thought I was a Nazi. And so I was like running through the streets of German towns, trying not to be a Nazi. And
anxiety fever dream.
It was crazy. It was a very, very weird time. But yeah. It's because of everything you do at the moment, you turn on any news supply, you watch anything that's not just yuck, yuck, like fail videos. And it's just Nazis everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We did like 100 episodes where we never said the word Nazi.
I know. And then suddenly, like in the last three episodes, it's just been saying it nonstop. It's wild as well. And I think it's the other thing is this loads of people going, oh, they're not the people who look like Nazis aren't Nazis. The person doing the Nazi salute isn't a Nazi. And you're like, well, I feel like you would do that if you were a Nazi.
One of my favorite veins of that is people on CNN or whatever American broadcast is saying like, oh, this focus on the hand signal is ridiculous. And then the other person be like, then do it. Go on, do it. If it's not a problem, exactly. Do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then people get very sheepish very quickly about replicating Musk's elevated paw.
Yeah, we'll be talking about Musk's elevated paw in just a moment. But we didn't want to leave you with like the most abjectly depressing news possible. So we did discuss last week, Germany isn't dominated by the AfD, nor by far-right voters. And a year ago, almost to the day, Germany took to the streets in dramatic fashion as months of protests against the far-right occurred across the country. So that can't be forgotten. Though this would obviously be surely welcomed before this coming election, there have been sizable protests already, many taking place just over the last weekend. So there were protests at the AfD conference and routinely, but there's some other ones. There's tens of thousands of people gathered in Berlin late on Saturday afternoon for a demonstration. The organizers said there was about 100,000. The police said there was about 35,000, but that's a common refrain where the organizers will say it's very big and the police will say it's very small, but there's no real way of counting the size of these groups. There was a rally in Köln down the road from producer Simon, 40,000 took the streets. So there is a movement afoot, I hope. Both these protests were against far-right extremism. And I thought it might be worth mentioning at this point how the right-leaning media in Germany is covering all of these protests and what's been going on. And I'll say this now, you better strap in because I feel like some of these fuckers have been sniffing some really good shit. So there was a story in Nordkurier that I read where someone was criticizing the demonstrations against the far-right because they're sending completely the wrong signal after the attacks in various towns, but especially in Aschaffenburg last week, which I thought was pretty wild. He said, oh, I'm a parent and I'm disgusted. And I was like, well, I'm a parent and I'm not disgusting. So we cancel each other out. My vote cancels out your vote. Tough titties. It got even wilder though, and also in a very similar vein, Bild printed like a pseudo opinion piece on the protests from one of their journalists, and it's titled Demo Against the Far Right Was Self-Righteous and Embarrassing. And they criticized the Green Party members and cabinet ministers, saying their appearance at the rally seemed particularly inappropriate. After the brutal crimes, obviously in Aschaffenburg, it went on that the whole country is holding its breath. And then Welt.de went to the presses with an opinion piece yesterday by the journalist Anna Schneider, who you might know is like a kind of semi-professional troll on various different platforms. X.com, surprisingly. What a weird place to find someone of her ilk. And she channeled those internet troll energies into the headline, describing the protests as a complete detachment from reality 3 days after the horror in Aschaffenburg. So the right-leaning media is obviously very angry about people protesting the far right, which seems like a weird position to take.
I mean, that last one is just straight out of the Republican rule book. Like, you have a school shooting in America and they say, oh, it's too soon to be talking about anything, any policy. Thoughts and prayers. And then as soon as you've agreed to that sort of ceasefire of discussion, by the time you're allowed, it's too late. Yeah, it's just the playbook is so visible. This has been done before. It will be done again. And this kind of protest and resistance is so reserved and timid compared to what would be done if the shoe was on the other foot. I mean, seeing these very moving videos of women singing Bella Ciao IFD tents in German cities, makes you realize that this, the peaceful element of this protest is more than would be deserved, considering what the IFD is actually trying to do to some of these communities.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's exactly it. I do find it odd that there's so much heavy criticism for green politicians in particular attending these protests, and there's a lot of focus on them posting on social media, and the way the articles were sort of structured, the Bild and Welt articles in particular, were very much casting the protesters as kind of champagne socialists or kind of wealthy upper middle class people who should know better and they should be embarrassed, blah blah blah, for having opinions, which is an interesting take, actually, I suppose, because I guess there's a legitimate criticism to be made about protesting after a serious attack in this instance, and the attacks themselves could be kind of forgotten in the maelstrom of protest, but also it could be lost in the maelstrom of bullshit coming from politicians and the media. So if they're going to talk about the people of Aschaffenburg, it might as well seem sensible to look at what's been happening in Aschaffenburg since the brutal attack last week. The first thing that the people of Aschaffenburg had to contend with was the arrival of AfD politician and notable fascist Björn Höcke, who turned up from his home in Thuringia, where he's kind of causing bother, as he's wont to do. And he turned up for an AfD memorial service in Aschaffenburg at the weekend. That's weird. There didn't seem to be an article complaining about the detachment from reality that the AfD were presenting by having their own politically motivated memorial service in a place where there'd been a brutal murder.
Did he push through the crowd saying, "Take me to the dead white child"?
Yeah, well, wait, mate, just hold on, hold your horses. You'll be surprised by what happens next. Bild also didn't mention this arrival of Björn Höcke and what was clearly a publicity stunt. They didn't describe it as self-righteous or embarrassing, which seems odd. This is despite the fact that Höcke was obviously there for political reasons and even talked about the murdered girl, which is odd because the child who was killed was actually a boy. So that suggests that Mr. Björn Höcke didn't quite know what the fuck was going on. But yeah, it's quite naked, the kind of political machinations that are occurring there. On the other side of that, Hooker's visit sparked a spontaneous protest by 500 people against the AfD event itself. So that's 500 people from Aschaffenburg who felt that it was worthwhile to protest against far-right movements. That grew, in fact, to 3,000 people on Sunday, all who turned out on the streets of Aschaffenburg to protest against far-right extremism, along with their brothers and sisters in Berlin and Köln. So again, did not see a Bild article or a Welt article saying that the people of Aschaffenburg should not protest against far-right extremism, which is a bit odd. I do wonder if they're being disrespectful to maybe our friendly journalists we mentioned might be able to tell us. And to round things off, and bring back Elon Musk into the discussion, we have obviously the discussion last week about Elon Musk's Hitler Gruß at Donald Trump's inauguration, and British and German protest groups led by Donkeys and Zentrum für politische Schönheit, which is the Center for Political Beauty, which is a great name. They projected a video of Musk's salute onto the Tesla Gigafactory in Brandenburg, along with the words Heil next to the factory's Tesla sign, creating Heil Tesla. So what do you make of this rather public protest?
Yeah, it looked great. I think it was visually a very strong performance. I mean, led by Donkeys, anyone that follows UK politics will be very familiar with their work, and they have done incredibly good visual projections onto the Houses of Parliament, etc. So yeah, more excellent work by that group. I mean, my Reddit is filled with people with Cybertrucks having Nazi scratched onto them or spray painted on. I've seen dealership signs with fuck off fascists spray painted onto them. And I know that there is a growing number of people who won't call them Cybertrucks anymore. They call them swastikas, which apparently Elon hates. So more of that. Mm. I also read an account of someone who works at Rivian, which is, of course, one of the big rivals for Tesla. And until 2 weeks ago, they would average at this dealership about 2 trade-ins a week for Teslas, and it's gone up to 18 a day at the moment. So there's one branch in California. So people who have sort of gone along with Tesla ownership, in spite of maybe some questionable beliefs, have definitely wanted to get rid of their cars. I've seen a lot of people selling Tesla stock in protest. So obviously his pockets are the deepest that have ever existed. But yeah, fuck him. I think fantastic that he's annoyed and losing money at the same time. He deserves much more.
I think it's true. And I think if there was one way to hit Elon Musk, because he does seem untouchable given his wealth and kind of power and status, is to hit him where it hurts in the pocket. But not even necessarily in the pocket. Like if he becomes too painful for Tesla, what does that mean? You know, like he's not untouchable in that sense. He could still be a billionaire, but not have all his baubles of kind of Tony Stark-like tech genius. What's interesting, though, seeing the fallout from the protest at the Tesla factory. Initially, Musk claimed it was fake, and the police themselves said they found no evidence of anything actually happening. Then both the groups involved, Zentrum für politische Schönheit and Led by Donkeys, countered that it obviously wasn't, and there'll be more protests to come. And then the police eventually admitted there'd been an incident and that they were, in fact, investigating. So despite some attempts to kind of present this as fake news, it was revealed by the police that it had actually happened. Moreover than that, we have a definitive answer, actually, to whether Musk would be arrested for doing the same gesture last week in Germany. So if he was not on a Washington stage, instead on a stage in perhaps Brandenburg, if he'd done the similar, what was it, the term you used last week, like the Roman salute. Yeah, if he'd done the Roman salute, or as we know it here, the Hitler Gruß, the Brandenburg police are in fact currently investigating whether the image that was projected on the Tesla factory was using a symbol of an unconstitutional organization, which everyone in Germany knows means Nazis. And so they are in fact investigating whether the Hitler salute that was projected onto the Tesla factory does in fact break the law for Nazi salutes. I don't think Musk has got anything particularly to worry about. No doubt the police will charge the people from Led by Donkeys, which would be unsurprising.
I mean, there's a couple of aspects I just want to quickly plug on the end there. The first one is, this is of course during the week of the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, a pretty important moment in history in terms of moving on from Nazi era. And of course, the other thing that I read that was interesting to me is that for a long time on social media, Musk has always used 420. And 420 has a couple of uses in internet culture and youth culture. For a lot of people, it's about smoking weed. 420 is the time of day where it's okay to light up a doob and get baked.
So not 10 a.m. Shit. Oh.
Yeah. It's 420 somewhere, I guess, is the policy for that. But it also happens to be Hitler's birthday. And so now all these people are like, oh, he's shit. He's been tweeting 420 for like a decade. We just thought he was like making weed jokes. And it's that he just loves Hitler. And of course, his double down pun of like Nazi name jokes instead of an apology after his Hitler Gruß showed that this is a man who is obviously interested in the ideologies. I mean, yeah, I think most British people, when we go to school, I can't speak for New Zealand's educational system, I don't want to be too damning, but once we get past like Goebbels and Hitler, it's going to get quite hard to name Nazis. But he seems to know more names than you probably should, unless you are a history buff.
When he gets to Rudolf Hess, you know there's something going on, right?
It's okay. This one, he studied this. but I don't know what the norm is in South Africa at his time at a private school, where he was probably busy counting his, was it rubies?
Emeralds, I believe.
Emeralds. It must make it hard to read the history books, I'm sure, all those emeralds.
The goods are wiping away the piles of emeralds from your books. Yeah, perhaps. But yeah, it's well, hopefully there'll be more protests like the ones seen at the Tesla factory and against far-right extremism across the country, hopefully. Okay, gents, to finish off, what is the most amount of money you've ever lost?
It can't be more than like 20 quid, just drunk. Actually, no, it was 20 quid and a jacket I had it stolen at a New Year's Eve party in East London.
just a lesson not to go to East London.
My friend Tom was so annoyed about how I behaved because I was just complaining about not having a jacket. He went and stole someone else's and gave it to me.
Is that how it works? Is that how it is in London town? I've got a friend in London at the moment and I'm worried for them. I'm worried about having their jackets stolen.
There's just a pick and mix jacket selection at the end of this party in East London.
Law of the jungle up there. What about you, producer Simon?
Maybe $10. Honestly, I don't think I've ever lost any money. I can't remember losing money.
Is that because you're really careful just in general, or is that because you're...
No, it's because I don't go out, remember.
Incredibly frugal.
What about you, gambling, Nick?
Hey, I've lost money. In other words, I was thinking about just generally losing, not giving it to various different gambling devices.
The Spielautomaten.
Yeah. Hey, the Spielautomaten, they're great. I put 50 euros in and I get 5 euros back. Hey! No, I have lost 50 euros before. That was in a terrible moment. And it was, I forgot to take the money out of an automat.
And it didn't just swallow it.
No, the next guy behind me took it out. Clearly, just took it out. There was 50 euros gone and it didn't come back to me. So, yeah.
Well, it sounds like you gifted it to someone as opposed to losing it.
Maybe I didn't lose it. Maybe I was just sharing it around, but it's probably my own fault.
Very generous of you.
Indeed. Well, spare a thought. We've lost sort of insignificant sums when we compare it to this story of this poor gentleman on Deutsche Bahn. But, employees of Deutsche Mart, in fact, found a suitcase with 42,000 euros on a siding, and the police were obviously called and they noticed the bag, and they had an idea who the money belonged to, and the money itself, in fact, belonged to a drunken homeless man who was living nearby under a sidling, I guess, but perhaps, who knows. The homeless man left tens of thousands of euros in cash at a train station in Schwandorf. He also left a new e-bike, a cell phone, and a suitcase, as well as a cloth bag, all which were found by Deutsche Bahn employees, luckily. And the police were alerted and cordoned off the area. And they then went and hunted down this gentleman and gave him back his goods. The only reason the police themselves actually knew who the money belonged to is they had, in fact, picked up the homeless man the night before and taken him to a shelter. And so they knew exactly where to find him. And he was indeed the rightful owner. And it was explained that, in fact, the money was an inheritance. And he'd gone out to celebrate. He bought himself a new bike and then done what everybody else would do in that given situation, finding that they had come into a little bit of money. He got properly pissed and then left everything at a train station. It's actually quite a nice story, really. This guy, this homeless guy, getting his inheritance back after losing it at a train station. I'm not sure I'd have the same luck. I think if I lost £42,000 or euros, it would disappear into the night like that 50 euro note. That brings us to the end of the show. We're off to the railway sidelings at our local train station to see if we can find 42,000 euros in an unmarked suitcase. If you're enjoying the podcast, why not give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, which only takes a minute and can really help us. You can also rate us on Spotify, so chuck some stars our way there as well. The podcast has accounts on Blue Sky and on Instagram, so feel free to follow us on those social media platforms. Just search for Decades From Home to find us. As ever, if you have any questions, feedback, or maybe an article or topic you'd like us to cover, reach out via any of our social media channels or get us on decadesfromhome@gmail.com. If you have the time, take a look at 40%german.com, where weekly articles are up every Saturday. All that's left to say is thanks, and bis zum nächsten Mal. Tschüss!
Tschüss!
Tschüss und auf!